step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 615. I am Lisa Sheps, as I was last week, and I am joined by my co-host, who also was last week, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During the pandemic times, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Stick with us.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Like a love-hungry kid. Isn't this better?
It is Wednesday, May 5th, 5-5. On the show today, we have different stages, Norman Blumenthal and Karen Jambone, talking about their show online, Sing and Barry. And of course, Nicole and I will have lovely conversations with the world of theater in Austin and elsewhere and beyond. Stick with us after this song.
Seems never to last. Better a man.
Well, that song was the lovely Rebecca Luker and Sally Wilford. It's a new album that just came out called All the Girls. And that song was called Isn't It Better? Written by Kander and Ebb for the movie Funny Lady. Rebecca Luker died, I believe, a year and a half ago of ALS. Maybe it was a year ago.
Not that long ago. Within the last year.
I think it was about a year ago. But she died of ALS, better known as Lou Gehrig's disease. It was very tragic. She is the wife of Broadway star Danny Burstein. And she was an incredible talent. So we'd already talked about her death, but this is did you read the article in the Times about this, about the making of this album?
I got halfway through it and then I have it tagged to go back and actually read.
Well, it's very interesting. So first of all, I don't know a lot about the other person on this thing, Sally Wilford, but Sally Wilford is a belting alto and Rebecca Luker is a soprano, and they talk about the difference of not having the good song. So Rebecca Luker played Laurie in Oklahoma, and she complains that she sings her ass off, but 808 E steals the show, which is true. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the voice. I mean, the soprano voice just isn't that funny, if you will. Although my girl, Laura Benanti, soprano, funny as hell.
Laura Benanti is one of those surprising sopranos that makes it all fun, even when it's not.
Anyway, in September 19th, oh, this is where I got 15 months. So she had a concert at Merkin Hall on September 15th, in September of 2019, which was 15 months before she died. So she died in 2020. You're right.
She died at like Christmas time, I thought.
Yeah, not sure. But almost immediately after that, and I don't believe she was diagnosed at that time, so I don't believe she knew she had ALS at that time, but almost immediately after that, she was unable to sing. Or she did a couple more concerts where it was really hard for her to sing. But they took that music, they repurposed the orchestrations, had those re-recorded, and they created this album out of a lot of this music that she had done that was a concert that wasn't really recorded well, but they fixed it and they made it like a studio album. And so it's pretty amazing.
I agree. I didn't know if you were still talking or not, so I didn't want to pipe in, but I was sitting here shaking my head like, yes, no, I totally agree.
So in the New York Times article written by Jesse Green, he says, talking about that night, as yet undiagnosed that night, she had some trouble climbing into the de rigueur stool, but she sounded as beautifully ever, clearly enjoying the chance to sing songs about sisterhood with someone who was, in fact, as close as a sister. They met, Wilfert recalls, at a reading in 2005 when Wilfert said, "I'm going to the bathroom." Luker said, "I'm going too." And they sat in adjacent John's yakking away. He just said yakking. I added the word away. I just think it should have been there. Anyway, so that album is available now, and there'll be a link to it at offstageonair.com that you can see. So the other piece of news, you know, we say it's sad news, and indeed it is sad, but she lived a long life, was we lost Olympia Dukakis last week, who is best known for her film roles, where she won the Oscar for Moonstruck. And I have to admit that I hadn't heard of her before that, but she has a long and storied career. Not only her, but her brother, both actors, and her husband is oh no, he's, I think he's passed away, but he did a whole bunch of musical theater. But she passed away, but I hadn't heard of her before then. And that was the time that her cousin, Michael Dukakis, who was the governor of somewhere.
Illinois?
Was it Illinois? No, it wasn't Illinois. It's in here somewhere. But he was running for president. And I said, oh, she's only known because her cousin is running for president. But that is absolutely untrue. She was so well known. And it's got a long and storied career. And you just taught me that she did 70 Girls 70.
She did. She did the Candor and Ebb 70 Girls 70. She did the Encores production. I want to say it was like 2008, 2009.
Well, you can say whatever you want. This is our podcast.
She also did a play that I love that I did with Rebecca Robinson years ago called Social Security.
Yeah, yeah, she did.
I think Mike Nichols directed it, but he didn't write it. He's not the playwright on it. And I think Marlo Thomas was in that with her, right?
I don't know.
I think that girl was the other wife in it with her, but I love her. She's great comedic timing, man.
So she never really gave up stage. She came back. Her latest thing was in 2011. She did an off-Broadway production of The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore by Tennessee Williams. Charles Isherwood, my man, called her, quote, "macabre, hilarious, and weirdly touching with a bullying bravado that commands attention." And then she also played, I forgot about this, at Shakespeare and Company in Massachusetts, she played Prospera in The Tempest.
I do remember that. That's pretty awesome. She would, yeah. Oh, I wish I saw that or someone had a taping that I could see because that sounds just intriguing.
So Moonstruck was a Nora Ephron film that she saw her in a production of Christopher Durang's The Marriage of Bette and Boo. Decided that she wanted her for Heartburn.
I forgot she was in Heartburn. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And, you know, I forgot she did not, I'm wrong that Miss Ephron didn't do Moonstruck because that was Norman Jewison. She did Heartburn.
Yeah. I forgot she was in Heartburn. Now that you just said Heartburn, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah. See, I can say things. I can. Let's stick with the and rest in power, Olivia Dukakis.
For sure.
Yeah. Let's just keep with the Shakespeare theme. Did you see this? It's called Fat Ham.
Yes. Alex Halford even emailed me on it too.
So this is it's an online, and it's done at, oh my God, I've got to find it. I'll find it before we get off. But it is a take on Hamlet. Most everybody is African-American. Oh, I know why. It's not, I don't have my, I didn't have the right. It's the Wilma Theater, and it's through May 23rd that you can see it. But it sounds great. And in the article in the Times, which there'll be a link at offstageonair.com, talks about how, you know, what all the equivalent roles are. Prospero is, not Prospero, sorry.
I was like, Prospero's in Hamlet?
Who's Ophelia and Laertes' dad? What's his name?
Oh gosh, now I can't think of his name.
To thy own self be true was his line. Anyway, he is played by a woman, and I forgot the name. So Ophelia and Laertes is Opal and Larry. Laertes is Larry. And Polonius is the father, is a purse-clutching church lady named Rabbi, who's played by Jennifer Kidwell. This is written by... James I. James. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. It's James, and the last name is spelled capital I J M E S. So I'm saying it's James I. James. He's takes Hamlet. I'm bottom line, we won't go into a lot of detail, but the thing about Hamlet and many of Shakespeare's tragedies is it's such a bummer at the end. It's, you know what, Bill, love you, but can't you not, why does everybody have to die and go crazy? But anyway, this has got an uplifting end, and I believe it's got a big dance number at the end. So again, that is available through, what did I say? 23rd. At wilmatheater.org, and theater spelled with an E-R. Also, there will be a link on our website. So here's something you sent me that I'd like to chit-chat about. Copywriting choreography. I know you saw the article because you sent it to me.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it?
So I don't have the gentleman's name offhand to.
I can give it to you. It's the guy that he choreographed Beyonce stuff.
Yeah, and I can see him.
And it's Jacquel Knight.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's created a service to copyright choreography. You know, as I emailed to you, I get it. I understand it. But at the same time, to me, that's like copywriting a recipe.
Well, I guess it depends. So my thinking is, and this all came about after, this is a thing that there was somebody that came on Jimmy Kimmel and danced all these TikTok moves that right. were done by choreographers of color. And they gave them no mention until the next night when he got called on for it.
He got called on it and then did a whole thing on it. Yeah, he was a bad boy.
So it came after that. So I'm wondering, so I think that you could copyright a dance, I would assume. That would be easy. So it's like dance move A goes to dance to B or something that like goes, but I don't think you can copyright dance steps individually. You know what I mean? Maybe you can copyright.
How are you through time, people move in weird ways. How are you to say no one's ever done that move before? It's just,
well, it's so- not the move. It's to me, it would be the, and we don't know what he's doing, but if I'm,
yeah, and
if
that's what I don't get.
If I'm choreographing number two, for instance, the Lindy Hop, then from downbeat to the end of song, 100% of those moves, if that is copied, then that's a copyright infringement.
I found it fascinating. I'm not knocking the guy at all. I find the whole thing fascinating. I don't have enough to make opinions, but I'm like, I'm very curious. I see pros and cons to it. I'm very curious.
So this is an article from Variety written by Jazz Tenke, and there will be a link to it on offstageonair.com. That's that. And let's see, what else do we have here? The Great Gatsby.
What about it?
Well, first of all, in January, it went off copyright, speaking of that. So it's in the public domain. And
That's crazy.
No, there has been a onslaught of plays going in. Well, there's something coming to Broadway, Great Gatsby, the musical. Which has been in thoughts for a while, but it's
I feel like I've heard that rumor of Gatsby the Musical for years. Yeah. Like a
lyrics by Florence Welch. Do you know who that is?
She from Florence and the Machine, or
yes,
that is. It's that Florence.
Yep, and then the book by playwright Martagna Majork or Majork. So it's going to be a musical.
Florence and the Machine. I mean, but then you know what? Trent Reznor's getting his EGOT and he's going to have a Tony soon. I mean, he might as well write a play. Florence and the Machine, really?
Yep. And the music is going to be by Thomas Bartlett, who did the Oscar-nominated song from Call Me By Your Name called Mystery of Love. Rebecca Frecknell will be directing it. And playwright, well, we already talked about the playwright is Martagna Majork, who won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 2018 for Cost of Living. So this is produced by Lynn Blatvinick, who also produced Moulin Rouge and Jagged Little Pill.
Curious. Interesting.
The Great Gatsby. Great Gatsby that I had not read until the movie came out, and I quickly read it, and it's a super quick read. It's like,
which movie came out?
I believe it starred, and I don't know. It was was it Leonardo DiCaprio? It was the one that came out about
the original movie. You waited till Leo, and didn't read the book till then, really?
Yes. So this judgment must stop right now.
It's not judging. I'm shocked.
Oh, that was so judgy.
It was not judgy. I'm shocked.
Oh my gosh. It was judgy. Okay. Broadway Barks. Roof, roof. Roof. So Broadway Barks last year was virtual online. This year though,
Le in person?
No, also virtual.
I'm just kidding. I thought it was virtual too.
This is the 23rd Broadway Barks, and this is founded by Bernadette Peters and Mary Tyler Moore together, and it benefits a whole bunch of different rescue organizations. So I did see it last year. Did you see it last year?
No, I did not see it last year.
I did, and I'm looking forward to this year. Here's a list of people that are participating.
Oh, they keep adding, and it's cray-cray.
Okay, this is just a partial list. Annalee Ashford, Stephanie J. Block, Carol Burnett, Harry Connick Jr., Sheryl Crow, Ted Danson, David Diggs, Gloria Estefan, Calista Flockhart. We haven't heard that name in a long time. Whoopi Goldberg, Emmylou Harris, Megan Hilty, James Monroe Englehart, your boy, Hugh Jackman, Christopher Jackson, also your boy, Nathan Lane, Bob Mackey. I'm sure he's going to be wearing something marvelous. Audra McDonald, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Bebe Neuwirth, Mandy Patinkin, your best friend, David Hyde Pierce, Randy Rainbow, Kelly Ripa, Cheetah Rivera. I could have just said Cheetah. Leah Salonga, Philippa Sue, Mary Steenburgen, and Will Swenson.
I have to tell you, I fall in love with Christopher Jackson more and more each day.
He's amazing.
I just read a really great article on him. His son has autism. He is a huge voice in the autism community, and the work he does. I went down a rabbit hole, and I'm like, man, I just love you more and more every day, gentlemen. Every day.
There you go. You heard it here first on Offstage and on the Air. Now, I am looking forward to this. Again, I think it's Apple Plus. Schmigadoon.
Schmigadoon is Apple Plus because it's another one I don't have. And I was like, Schmigadoon, Schmigadoon. That sounds like what I call Brigadoon.
So Schmigadoon is, oddly enough, about... A couple of people that come across, and the couple of people I'm talking about specifically are Cecily Strong from Saturday Night Live and Keegan-Michael Key, find a magical city that appears every now and then, named Schmigadoon. But listen to the cast of characters that live in Schmigadoon.
Schmigadoon sounds way better than Brigadoon.
It does. Alan Cumming, Kristen Chenoweth, Jane Krakowski, Aaron Tveit, Dove Cameron, Ariana DeBose, who I'm in love with, Fred Armisen, Jamie Camille, and Anne Harada.
So, like, really, when is Schmigadoon appearing in my backyard? Because I am so for Schmigadoon.
It looks great. Let's see if there's a date on this. Oh, it's Barry Sonnenfeld is the director, and Barry Sonnenfeld directed Pushing Daisies, which I really loved, starring one Kristen Chenoweth. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say, oh, it's going to debut this summer. Sometime this summer.
Like, I think it's sometime this summer. I didn't see a date, but yes, I don't have Apple TV, so I'm going to have to find someone's house to go to.
Well, I will be purchasing it, so you can come to my house.
I'm just going to camp out at your house and hang out for a while. I'm temporarily summer rental.
So, and then speaking of things coming out, I'm very excited about this one. The play Oslo, which is on Broadway, I think 3 seasons ago, is going to be on HBO. And there's a trailer about it right now. And so this is talking about the Oslo Accords. And it's very, was it shut down for the pandemic or did it close before that?
I think it closed right before that. I don't think it was a pandemic casualty.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but I think it did close down right before that, Lisa.
Right. So this is starring Ruth Wilson and Andrew Scott, and I am looking so forward to seeing it because it got such great notices.
Cool. I was like, oh, I didn't realize it was coming on HBO, like out on screen for us to see. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And I know it is. It's a film, not a recording of a stage play.
Right.
So, which is something we need to talk about because speaking of that, Come From Away is completing their shooting of their musical this month. And it's going to come out on Apple Plus, which means I'm going to have to get a new subscription to it. But here's the interesting thing. When they first announced this at the beginning of the pandemic, it was going to be made as a movie, like just a regular old movie musical. But, and I'm thinking with the success of Hamilton, it's going to be a hybrid between shooting what they did on stage, which I think it's such a representative thing. I think a literal movie might not have been very good.
You know what? When they said they were making it a literal movie, I'm like, why? It's so beautiful the other way. Maybe just do some like flashbacks or hybrid-y kind of stuff, which is maybe what they're doing. And that sounds really cool.
Yeah. And so they are actually in quarantine right now, getting ready to shoot the final bits of it. So, I'm guessing they're shooting the stage versions.
So we really have to get Kevin Turnoff on our show, who is the basis of the character, the real Kevin T, who wrote the book and helped do all this. He's here in Austin.
I know. You've talked about this several times.
Yeah, we just need to do it instead of me just talking about it.
Yeah, that's good. Or we can keep talking about it. It's kind of fun.
Well, we could still talk about. Remember that time we had the real Kevin T on?
Yeah. All right. So let's take a little break. We're going to play something from Come From Away. And I don't know what it is. It's going to be a surprise.
Okay.
Make me a channel of your peace where there is hatred left.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa.
And me, Nicole.
Well, that was Prayer from Come From Away. Let's do this.
Go ahead.
No, you.
I was going to ask you if you saw a Niederlander passed away.
I did. That was the Niederlander. That's not the Niederlander from that's the New York. Is the Chicago Niederlander or
the Midwest Niederlander?
The Midwest Niederlander. Yes, yeah. I did. I don't know enough about him to talk about him, but I do know that he passed away. Let's talk about this to begin with. And I should say that the views and opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not those of Co-op, its board of directors, or staff. It is merely the opinions of Nicole and I talking about stuff. So a couple of things happened, and you sent me this with the in the body of your email. You said, "Huh," and this is talking about the first ever Equity Convention, which on its first day ended with a walkout. Now, did you read the whole article and the
personal notes and stuff? Yeah, that was more of a That was what that was supposed to be in that email. My mouth was on the floor.
No, I got the reading of it and I totally understood it. So bottom line is, and I forgot the gentleman's name, somebody was, so I should say that this is the first equity convention and it's made up of elected people that to come to the convention, plus all equity counselors who are also elected. There's one this year, there's going to be one next year, and then after that, it's every 2 years. So the people that were at this convention will go to the next convention, and then I believe they will be elected different people for the convention following that. So one of the attendees, a Black man, started to feel unsafe by some of the things that were being said. And said that out loud. He was then, and I'm guessing since this was on Zoom, he suddenly found himself in a breakout room with the man, with the people from Equity, who said he was basically being an angry Black man. And then they came back and everybody was a little angry about this. Oh my God, Kate Schindel, the president of Equity, said, we only have a few minutes left. We have several different things we want to get on. Let's take a vote as to whether we deal with this issue publicly or carry on the business for the next 15 minutes. Guess what the vote was?
Oh, I know. That's why my mouth is still on the floor. You can
so the vote was, let's not deal with this. Let's just get on the business. And that took a whole bunch of people that says, you know what, kids, I'm out. And they left. And then they ended up, you know, stopping the meeting. And, you know.
And then you go back and read. No one really covered it. I'm shame on the media for just glossing over it and then writing a list of the things they said to do. And then my mouth again was on the floor when it says inclusion and diversity. And I literally was like, yeah, you didn't show that to any of your people in this conference.
It's really shameful. And there will be a link at Offstage and On the Air to the article that we got this from. It has blog posts and a really great video blog, which I believe was done on Instagram by one of the participants who happened to be a white man. But he just went through and said, this is what happened. Fact. So pretty amazing.
I just can't even believe Broadway Briefing, Broadway World, everybody didn't even
say a word
about it. And I'm like, this is the problem.
Yep. and then another issue around stuff, there's an article about decolonizing the King and I. Did you see that one?
I saw the article and I didn't read it, but I saw that come up and I was like, oh, that's interesting because you and I were just talking about plays that are fraught or dated.
Sure. It's an American theater magazine. You know, the show itself, they'd say in quote in this article, written by... No, I don't know who it's written by. I'm sure it's in here somewhere. Because I should give them. Sravya Tadpali. I apologize for the pronunciation. Sravya says it reeks of the show itself reeks of white saviorism and an imperialist gaze. What I found interesting is so much that I didn't know. So, The King and I is based on Anna and the King, which is based on a real person, Anna Leon Owens.
I have been to the palace in Thailand.
Okay. But Anna Leon Owens was a mixed race person who passed as white and did not tell anything about her mixed raceness.
Isn't that funny? Because that's not in the musical.
And when you read it, and she wrote books, and when you read the book, they're full of fabrications because she kept lying to keep her white status. Mm-hmm. So therefore, when they talk about decolonizing The King and I won't say a lot about what it is because I think you can go back and look at it, but they can basically cast Anna as a mixed race person hiding her mixed raceness, just as she is. And then she's no longer the white savior. She's, you know, this raconteur who's working with the king. And they really sort of lay out in this article how it could be done. It doesn't really change the plot that much, but it changes the focus away from white saviorism, and it gives the people of Siam, their own relevance in society. There was also the whole story of the princess who wants to go off with TikTok or whatever his name is, Tok. That also is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But the real Anna never confided in this person her own stuff. It's an amazing article. I really recommend reading it.
So when we went to Thailand, we were able to go to these palaces and stuff, and my mom and everybody was like, whatever. And I'm like, it's the king and I. I learned, and I had known about Anna being mixed race and hiding it, but there was so much more that they told you and learned. It was fascinating. Yeah. It was one of the most wonderful days I had in Thailand, like just learning things that completely flipped the lid on what we had been taught or knew, or it was fascinating.
Yep, I agree. So we are going to end this little section. Keep in mind that we did make the disclaimer about this stuff. We're going to play a little piece from Love It or Leave It, which is a podcast I listen to. And he has people write original songs that changes every week based on a theme. And this one was called Vax to the Future. And it has a little Broadway stint to it. So I'm going to play the whole thing. Here it is.
The CDC says we are free to hang out with our mask off, but only with our vaccinated friends. So don't be such a jack-off. Please keep it on, we're almost done. This is no time to relax as we get vaxxed to the future. I wanna go to a Broadway show when theater's back in business. I'll take on the Mean Girls and Jagged Pills with the kids at dear old Shiz. And while we're on the subject, Scott Rudin, go f*** yourself. Besides, the music man I'd never stand. Some revivals need the axe when we get vaxxed to the future. But not Carolina Change or Assassins. I'm gonna need those revivals to happen. But all joking aside, the deficit we could puncture and pay for infrastructure.
All right, so, well, that was Vax to the Future. Again, that's John Lovett, who has a podcast called Love It or Leave It. And John Lovett was a speechwriter for Obama. It's just our opinion. It has nothing to do with co-op, it's staff or volunteers, for that matter. So let's get right to our first interview here locally. We had Karen Jambone and Norman Blumenthal in their shows that they're doing at the different stages online. Shall we listen?
Let's listen.
We're here in the Zoom machine with some very dear friends. We have Norman Blumenthal and Karen Jambone, both with the different stages. Norman is the artistic director and founder of Different Stages. And Karen is the director of one of these pieces. And this piece is called Sing Barry. Norman, what is that? Well, actually, I should say in full, first of all, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I've forgotten my manners completely. It comes.
Pandemic will affect us all that way.
It comes from
the Zoom room.
I was about to say it comes from not wearing pants. welcome back to Offstage and On the Air. I feel like you're all family, so it's like all the formalities go straight through the roof. We did talk about this show last week on the show, but you know. What do we know? So it's a good thing that you're here, that you can give it some first person perspective. Norman, tell us about this show, or actually this pair of shows.
Well, this came about given given the joy of city funding at the moment of like when and if you will receive funding, the point was to pick public domain pieces that, you know, to try to keep the budget very low, and then to try to find interesting things, which is a challenge in both spheres because of the way the copyright laws were changed, well, I don't know, way back when, like at least 20 years ago or more, in which everything was extended by 20 years. Mm-hmm. So like this year, I think it's either everything that was written in 1924 is finally going into public domain, or 25, you know, where, you know, stuff should have been in public domain for a long time. So anyways, that's was the sort of genesis. And then it was like, you know, what do you want to do? And can we find anything that's remotely interesting, entertaining, anything that pertains to us?
So tell us about these shows.
Well, Karen, do you want to speak about In the Shadow of the Glen, and I'll speak about the...
Sure. Yeah. So In the Shadow of the Glen is a short one act by Singh, and it's one of the first plays that actually used the Irish vernacular that was then in at the time of the country people of Ireland, certainly not the city people. And like all of Singh's plays, it produced quite a hoopla because it did use that sort of, I guess, low down language. It takes place in County Wicklow, and
I don't mean to disturb you, but I just have to say I used to vacation there. It's great.
I love it. It's beautiful.
They have that big water slide. It's wonderful. Yeah.
When we were there, we took a tour of County Wicklow, went to the seven churches, which is referenced in the play, where all the monasteries were. And it's a very atmospheric piece in that he so beautifully describes through his characters how dark it is, and how it late at night and it's raining. And this woman is busy in the cabin with a body with a sheet over it, which is her dead husband. And so or is he? Or not. And so a tramp comes to the house, and then what ensues is somewhat comedic and somewhat tragic. But it's a, like I said, lovely little piece, very typical of Singh, and actually based on a true story one that was told to him when he was in the Aran Islands. Someone told him the story of a woman in a cottage who had a dead husband, and a tramp came over, and it appeared that the husband was just pretending to be dead because she was a bad wife. And so he took that story and turned it into this play. But true or not, I don't know, but that's what he said. And he, you know, and that's Singh. But it's a lovely little piece, and we had a great time doing it.
The other thing you need to know about Singh is that he, along with William Butler Yeats and Lady Gregory, they were part of the Irish aristocracy, the ascendancy, that, you mm-hmm. know, the people with money and the people who were Protestant. They were Protestant Irish, not Catholic Irish. So, you know, there's that tension there of these people writing these stories about, you know, it's...
Yeah.
And they, if I'm not mistaken, the three of them founded a theater.
Yes.
In that time. And people might know that Singh, his most popular piece, probably, that people have heard of if they haven't read it, like me, is Playboy of the Western World.
Which we did a number of years ago, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So, and one of the actresses who was in that play was in this play. So
awesome.
We came full circle.
And I will say, I took a little peek at both of the pieces, and what fun, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which leads us to the next piece that Norman, you directed. What is that one?
The Old Lady Shows Her Medals by J.M. Barrie. And J.M. Barrie is better known as the author of Peter Pan, the play, and the many Peter Pan books. In addition to that, he wrote many full-length plays and 10, 12 one-act plays. And this particular play was in a group of volume of plays that were all about the First World War. what, if you know anything about the history, if you've ever seen the movie Finding Neverland, which is about the creation of Peter Pan, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the fact that he met this family of young boys and became friends with them and, you know, created the stories of Peter Pan for them. And then when their parents died, he became their guardian and supported them the rest of their life on the profits from Peter Pan. That one of them, who he became very close to, you know, like many, 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 many people, you know, died early in World War I, you know. Mm. So these pieces that he wrote, you know, all deal, an awful lot of them deal with fathers. These four plays deal with father-son relations. This is sort of like a mother-son relation, but it has a very comic twist. So that's all. Is, you know, not unlike you know, the people who, I don't know how many people have found the love of their life during COVID, you know, something where it's sort of like the last thing you expect, or you mm-hmm. know. So,
well, and this is this deals with four washerwomen, if for want of a better word, is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Charwoman, that was the word I was trying to come up with.
Yes,
and that is, you know, typical of Great Britain or the UK in that time, the lower classes. And the language is just so much fun. And they tease each other about language, don't they? Or about pronunciations and things.
Well, pronunciations and who knows what. And whose son has suffered more in World War I. And how many letters they get, you know. The amount of letters, I mean, it's interesting researching this, the amount of letters that went back and forth in World War One. I mean, like thousands of letters every week, you know, to the trenches. And surprisingly enough, written in pencil.
Really?
Yes, probably. Well, no, who had an ink pen?
Yeah, I guess who had an ink pen? It makes sense to think about it, but... No.
Yeah, in what? The trenches. So they, you know, they wrote pencil letters back and forth. And there's like whole websites about, you know, the letters that people wrote in World War One. You know, they didn't have this kind of technology or a cell phone.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I just, you know, I don't want to belittle our troops in World War One, but, you know, how lazy is that? They have a quill and a blood. They could write in pen. No, so forgive me if you answered this already, because earlier I might have been doing a little bit of multitasking. But this is J.M. Singh and J.M. Barrie. How, I mean, coincidence? I think not.
No, total coincidence. Total coincidence. Yeah.
Or is it? Dun, dun, dun.
I think that's wild. And Norman, before we got on the air, you said that this particular production, or these particular productions, were fraught with some technical things. I'd love to hear a little bit about them.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so the Dickens went very easily. We had one rehearsal where someone who lived, one of the actresses who lived in Cedar Park, just went away, could not get back on. Not with this production. We had Sarah Seaton lives in Wimberley. We lost her one night. She had to come back on the cell phone, all in rehearsal. And then Catherine Schroeder, who plays the old lady and the old lady shows her medals, has an old computer. So there was all sorts of like issues of like what could be on the computer and how much she could, you know, she was always deathly afraid if you push the computer too far, the computer would just like, And she went away in a rehearsal. So it was like, and in addition to that, Robert Stevens, during the course of all of this, got married. Robert did a rehearsal from
his honeymoon. Like, he got married on Wednesday. We had our last tech rehearsal on Thursday. And he says, I'm setting up right now. And I'm like, okay, because I thought you were set. He said, "No, I'm at the hotel for our honeymoon." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then
I know, that's
romance like a final dress.
It was, and he's in the midst of a lot of different things right now, including emptying his mother's house, which he and his brother will. And so that on Friday's actual performance, he was resetting up everything from his mother's house. So his poor guy's been toting all of his props and his costumes from one location to the other. And I'm sure his new wife definitely appreciates that, that character coming along on their honeymoon. Thank goodness she loves theater. But yes. So it was,
And he evidently does too. With that's dedication, as we call it in the business.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, although there is a push these days to say that the show does not necessarily have to go on anymore. So I don't know. That might have been one of the issues. That says, guys, I'm not going to make this rehearsal. I'm going to go on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
The final dress rehearsal, which didn't have that issue, we recorded. To make sure, because we kept thinking, you know, who knows, you know, and then of course, you know, the next day, Saturday, it was pouring rain. So Lord knows if we had attempted
Saturday,
it probably would have been
a washout.
No pun intended.
So,
So this piece, it's one video, is alive on your YouTube channel even as we speak, correct?
Correct. I checked before we started and we've had 85 hits. And of course, you can never tell in, you know, on the YouTube is like, is it one person or a family or two or, you know.
Well, I have to tell you, I was one of them.
All right. Okay. Good.
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 So, you know, 1/85th of your audience.
Yeah.
So it's available on your YouTube channel. And, you know, the easiest way to get there that I would find is to go to your website, differentstages.org, and it sits right there. On the Sing Plus Barry stage page. I can't speak.
That's correct.
And that's going to be available on your YouTube channel until when?
Until the end of the week. Until next Saturday. And it may stay up longer, but at least it's definitely up till the end of the week.
Which is May 8th.
Yes.
Well, I found a... Part of my goal in doing this was to not have a box office person and not have to be sending out box office links at the last minute. I don't know how people were doing that. I mean, like when you buy something from the Irish rep, they make sure they send it out 2 hours before time, and they make you very clear that what time frame it's in, that it's New York time. So, you know, but you know, that means having a dedicated box office person. And it's like, no, there isn't a dedicated box office.
Yeah, there's a lot of details. Well, I enjoyed the portion. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched a good piece of each piece. Okay. And a lovely introduction from you in the beginning. And so I would tell folks that I enjoyed it. So why shouldn't they?
Good for you.
Great. So give folks your web address one more time.
DifferentStagesTheater.org.
Awesome. And before we let you go, do you have anything in the pipeline that you want to talk about at this point?
Well, we're looking at two more one acts, but that's in a planning stage. So for sometime in June.
Okay.
All right.
Cool. And Karen, do you have anything else in the pipeline you'd like to talk about?
I am cast in something that I'm not at liberty to talk about it as of yet.
Am I in the show?
No, I wish you were.
When will we find out? When will we
probably
hear?
Probably soon, because the artistic director is probably going to make an announcement fairly soon.
Wonderful.
Is it a Zoom event?
No, it's not a Zoom event. It may be an audio event, however.
Okay. So awesome.
That may give you a hint.
That does give me a hint, actually.
Producing it. Okay, there you go.
That gives me a good hint. But
there you go.
That's
so
just
there. That's all I can say at this point in time.
Well, thank you both for being on the show. And we look forward to having you on again.
Yes.
Right. Thanks for having us.
Good to see you guys.
Yes.
Good to see you.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. JM and JM. Coincidence.
Karen and Norm and Norm and Karen spending the afternoon.
Sharon. I'll finish it for you.
I love it.
So Secret Garden Workshop production is being being streamed on Broadway On Demand as a fundraiser. And this is a It was a planned revival, no longer planned, I don't think, but this is from Broadway On Demand. It's going to be May 6th, tomorrow through the 9th, available on Broadway Demand. It's dedicated to Rebecca Luker, who played Lily in the original. So here's the cast. Clifton Duncan, Drew Gehlig, Sierra Boggess, Amber Inman, Adam Chandler Barrett, Brooklyn Shuck, Cameron Mann, Matt Doyle, Sally Ann Triplett, Jim Norton, Anoop Desai, Ali Ewalt, and Kuhu Verma. So that's something that I will see. So the funds,
you could have told me the whole cast and I would have been like, yeah, whatever, because I just love this, The Secret Garden. And I'm not a Mandy Patinkin fan and I couldn't get enough of this show. I just think it's so beautiful and haunting and lovely. And I'm going to have in my head all day, I heard someone crying. Ooh, how could it be?
Well, you'll have your chance to see it. And you can find a link at offstageonair.com. I did not say that the proceeds will go to the Dramatists Guild Foundation and the Actors Fund. Well, that's it for today. You've done another hour of Offstage and On the Air. We're gonna leave this with something from Secret Garden.